On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a long and winding road for women in the American workplace. First, they were frozen out or locked in the steno pool. Then came liberation with its open doors and glass ceilings. Then a crisis of confidence over whether work and child-rearing could really coexist. And now the new challenge of the era of extreme work, when 70-hour weeks and 24/7 demands can make work-life balance seem impossible. But we need the talents of women at top levels. Up next on Point, blowing up the old career path, off-ramps, on-ramps, and a new vision for women at work. Joining me now from New York is economist and corporate provocateur Sylvia Ann Hewlett. She's professor at Columbia University, founding president of the Center for Work-Life Policy. She created a big stir about women, motherhood, and the workplace with her 2003 book, Creating a Life. Her new book is Off-Ramps and On-Ramps, Keeping Talented Women on the Road to Success. Sylvia Ann Hewlett, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, it's a great pleasure to be on your show.
Extreme work, what's that, and how's it hitting women?
It's fascinating. You know, there's all kinds of ways in which we've kind of moved the goalpost. In this new data, what you see is that, you know, 45% of managerial positions these days follow this extreme work model, 60 hours plus a week, plus another five performance pressures, you know, which range from 24/7 client demands to working in multiple time zones. And the other thing, Tom, which I think is worth pointing out, is that the demands of parenting have also become more extreme. Think of all those, you know, baby Einstein products out there. It seems that a mom these days is made to feel guilty if you don't produce a seriously gifted child. So I think we've, you know, upped the ante on both fronts.
So extreme work, extreme parenting. The last time out that you were in print, Sylvia Ann Hewlett, there was this firestorm because you seemed to be suggesting that women wanted to really go high in the career world, the corporate world, couldn't have kids, or at least about half of them didn't.
Well, I think what I pointed out in that book, I just laid out the data and showed that about 40% of women in corporate America were having a real hard time putting the two things together, and most of them wanted to do it. And then with this work, what I've done is that I've spent the last 3-4 years organizing employers. I have 34 global companies newly driving some change, because what I'm trying to do here is obviously create more generous choices for a whole lot of women and also some men, because, you know, obviously it's really hard to create that kind of magical balance.
So describe for us then, you want to blow things up a little bit here, and there's a traditional career path. Interestingly, you call it the competitive white male career path. I want to ask about that. But you say it just doesn't leave room for a whole lot of women. And in fact, is the reason that at the end of the race, it's very often a man sitting in the corner office. What is that career path that you say has to be changed, blown up?
Well, Tom, here's the story. 40 years ago, you know, we did have a woman's revolution that transformed female opportunities. And that was incredibly important. I know that very clearly in terms of my own history. You know, I grew up in the Welsh coal mining valleys. And if it wasn't for that, you know, revolution, my own opportunities would have been extraordinarily limited. As a girl child in that environment, the most you could look forward to was maybe, you know, marrying an unemployed miner. So I do value enormously those new opportunities. But the fact is, we haven't created the circumstances that allow women to rise up through the ranks, to find that acceleration in their careers. And this is why. There is just one career model out there. I call it the male competitive model. And there's two kind of properties of this traditional model which are very hard for women. First of all, you're expected to conjure up these lockstep, continuous, cumulative career progressions. You know, you've got to kind of stay in employment full time for a whole bunch of years.
Hand over hand, rung over rung, right straight
Absolutely.
Up the ladder if you're lucky.
Very lockstep. Secondly, the model expects you to have the steepest gradient in your career path to occur in the decade of one's 30s. That's when you either catch a wave mm-hmm. or you don't. Mm-hmm. There are no second chances. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that collides in the worst ways with the biological clock because, you know, maybe 34, 35 is, you know, when you're up for promotion, that key promotion, whether it's tenure or partnership or whatever. And that's exactly when the biological clock is, you know, starting to tick most loudly. So, you know, what I suggest is that from this data, we know that that's where women tend to be sideswiped, sidetracked. 93% of them are trying to get back on. And we've got to create a world where there are many more second chances, many more second shots at ambition. Because, you know, as you and I know, life is very long these days for women. There's a very... I guess, many decade career path that we're trying to fashion. And we absolutely need alternative pathways to power.
So when it comes to who's going to end up on top in the corporate world, you write that that steep gradient in people's 30s, when they're in their 30s, is where, as you put it, that enables men to shake off most of their female competitors moving up that ladder because so many women want to have a family then. That means at least a couple of years, very likely, of if not completely out of the workplace, then a less intense engagement with the workplace. But do you really think that can be completely redrawn? Is corporate America prepared to do that? Why would it?
Very important central question, Tom. You know, what I show in this book is that there's a new urgency to the employer's perspective. They do understand the demographic shifts of our age. We have, you know, two baby bust generations coming on stream, 78 million retiring baby boomers. And there's all kinds of holes out there in terms of the talent pipeline. And I think most employers understand that they can't afford to throw away two-thirds of their best female talent anymore. And I think, you know, there's very powerful data in this study. I really am able to map what's going on out there. Mm. And what I show is that, you know, 37% of all well-qualified women will take an off-ramp. And another third take what I call a scenic route.
So off-ramp, you mean they actually quit their job?
They voluntarily leave the paid workforce for a short period of time. And here's the magic of the data. I show that they only spend 2.2 years outside the labor force, and then 93% of them are trying to get back in. In other words, it's not a question of reabsorbing some totally kind of de-skilled, out-of-date set of folks who, you know, are floated into the sunset for 15 years. That is not what's going on. Most women really need that paycheck. Most women really love their work.
How do you define the women you're looking at in your study here, Sylvia? This isn't chicken choppers in Arkansas, you know, poultry processing plants. This is what, corporate up-and-comers? What's the universe of women you're looking at?
I'm looking at women with high-level undergraduate honors, undergraduate degrees or professional degrees or other kinds of graduate qualifications. I also show, Tom, that for, you know, less well-qualified women, it's also these career interruptions that get in the way of, enhancing their earning power over time. Interruptions right now are the big explainer of why the gender gap is so stubbornly wide. So, you know, this study is about the women with the market power who mm-hmm. might really be able to, you know, move the dial, you know, cause some change in workplace cultures. And that's why I'm focusing in on them. But their story is actually the story of many working American women. It is, you know, the mm-hmm. undertow of our age, if you like.
But in that echelon, you describe just as they kind of got poised maybe to step on up, along comes globalization, the BlackBerry, the internet, the conveniences, but also conveniences that push work to the extreme work level that you're writing about here, where men are, ready and willing and often enabled by women to go, but that's particular hurdle showing up at that very moment when they would be going for the gold for women.
Well, you know, what I show in this work, Tom, is that are far from kind of going away. I mean, if we just, you know, sit back and wait for women to get with the program, it's not going to happen, because the reasons that are forcing women to take that kind of break, either the off-ramp or the scenic route, are getting more intense as we, you know, move through these early years of the 21st century. What I show is that if you really map, you know, what's happening to good jobs in our economy, high impact work, there are 10 different ways in which they're becoming more intense, more burdensome. They use up more of your heart, your mind, your time these days. The average extreme worker in my study has a 73-hour work week. Just 10 years ago, it was 55 hours. Mm. And I think it's much harder to combine a 73-hour work week with, say, two small children than it was 10 years ago, trying to combine two small children with, you know, the 55-hour work week, which, you know, obviously was challenging enough. So I think we can expect increasing numbers of very committed, qualified women to need to take that break.
Sylvia, what do off-ramps and on-ramps look like in a career setting?
Well, off-ramps, as you might guess, Tom, are all too easy. It's extremely simple to leave a good job. On-ramps are much more problematic. You know, what I show in this study is that, you know, 93% of women are trying to get back in just 2 years plus after leaving because they've dealt with, you know, the peak demands of either that second child or perhaps, you know, mom had got Alzheimer's and is newly, you know, settled in a good caring situation. Those are two very frequent triggers of an off-ramp. So, you know, 2.2 years down the road, you're trying to get back in. But, you know, if 93% are trying to get back in, only 74% find jobs and only 40% find full-time mainstream jobs. And they also take a kind of financial clobbering. The data is astounding there. You know, you can lose 38% of your earning power if you spend, say, 3 years out. So all of the policies in this book and the new practices that are showcased in these 18 case studies are how to make it less punishing. How to welcome women back on, how to give them the kind of support and some flexibility so that they can be success stories, and from the company's perspective, how to tap into this very rich labor pool, which is increasingly needed.
Okay, so we're hopeful, but we're also skeptical about the sort of durability of human behavior and what we've seen with women in the workplace. Over so many years, you've looked at companies, American Express, Booz Allen Hamilton, Cisco, Citigroup, Ernst & Young, on and on, Goldman Sachs. What give us some of these on-ramps that they're experimenting with or have implemented. How are they working, and are they really working?
I'll give you two very clear examples, Tom. Take Booz Allen. This is a, you know, management consulting firm with a kind of road warrior lifestyle. You know, you're constantly out there moving between clients. A particularly hard career for a woman to keep going, you know, once she's had, say, that second child. And what they have done through working with the task force over the last 3 years, they've created this ramp down, ramp up program. It's called the adjunct program. Mm. And basically what it does, it offers women who otherwise would have been forced to quit the possibility of, say, a four-day-a-month job, just to tide that person over the months of overload. And then, you know, 1-2 years down the road, that person is then allowed to ramp up so that she can rejoin, you know, her career, if you like, it a little ways down the road. There are several hundred women already in this program. It's a huge success because instead of quitting and then, you know, 2-3 years down the road going to work for the competition, the women, you know, stay with the company. They feel enormously, I guess, loyal to this company that's given them this flexible road forward. Mm-hmm. And the company analyzed the profit margins of the women who were doing these part-time projects and found that they were, in fact, able to be very productive in the days they spent on the job.
So they keep them in their realm, in their universe. They keep them plugged in, keep them working, and have them come back when they're ready to do that, back to the extreme work road warrior model or not?
It depends on the person. They reckon about half of the women continue to need some kind of flexibility, which they are, they work out on a case-by-case basis. The other half really want to plunge right back in. Another example, in the financial sector, Lehman Brothers and Goldman Sachs have created new on-ramping programs specifically to help women come back in. At Lehman Brothers, it's called Encore. It's rolled out now in London and Tokyo as well as in New York. And Goldman Sachs has a very similar New Directions program.
And the on-ramp is what? Just an awareness or an explicit invitation? If you've taken time off to be a 30-something mother, we want you. Come here.
They go and seek these women. They invite them in for a short program, which is about reskilling, re-networking, some confidence building, because, obviously that is an issue with women who've been out for a couple of years. But the other thing they do, again, they not only offer them a place back on the fast track, but they're increasingly offering them reduced hour, flexible jobs. So it's a gentle on-ramp, again, so that the women can be success stories. But again, they're so encouraged by the results because they're finding that they are tapping into a fabulous talent pool of experienced hires who, fill a very important piece of their need in these sectors.
We want to test this vision of whether it puts women back in the fast track, if that's what they want, or just back to work. But we've got a lot of listeners who want to join you, Sylvia. Let me begin to turn to them. Sue is calling from Cumberland, Rhode Island. Sue, you're on the air with Sylvia Ann Hewlett.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good, good. What do you see, Sue?
Well, what I see is I'm a stay-at-home mom in Rhode Island. I would love to be working, but it doesn't work for my family. There's no way. I've got two small children. One's 4, one's 8. How do you take that time? All of the issues that she's talking about, I absolutely agree with. And I'm wondering, two important points, and I can listen for my answer. One is, how can we create this model, mostly for these two girls that I'm raising that are looking at me trying to weave it all together? Because I watched my mother in the 80s trying to balance it, and it just didn't work.
You thought your mother bit off too much in the 80s?
Well, the message then was you can have it all, and you juggled and you ran from thing to thing, and you wore the big shoulder pads and you wore the mom.
Right.
And and what you saw was a lot of tired, burned out women.
Sue, let me ask you, before you click off here, what if a company in your field was prepared to, I think the phrase Sylvia uses is chunk out some work to you? Could you fit some work into your mothering life that would keep you engaged and maybe in position to come back into the workforce?
Yes, I think so, and I think that that's a wonderful solution. And the second part of my question was, I would love to see more companies doing this. I'm wondering, is there some sort of role for the government? That's sort of saying, hey, let's make this flexible. I mean, other countries have done it, usually when their birth rate plummets and they realize that they need to address this problem. And so I guess my question is, what does the picture look like going down the road? And I love what you're drawing, but is it just going to be corporate America, or is it going to be across the board?
Right. Good. Great. Thanks, Sue. Sylvia, there you are. First of all, Sue doesn't want to make a model for her daughters of the perpetually harried mom. But she would like to work and wonders, is there a possibility of a policy that goes beyond corporate here? Would you even recommend that?
Absolutely. I love some of those ideas. Again, I'll give you some examples. Ernst & Young, one of the big accounting firms, has now 7 different ways you can work flexibly and be on a reduced schedule. One of their options, which I particularly like, is a seasonal one so that you can, work real hard in November and December and take the summer off. And obviously that is particularly wonderful for women with school-aged children. Mm. And obviously, in this culture, they've made remote working a central part of these options. So again, a company that's moving in the right direction, and all kinds of, 28-year-old men also, taking advantage of these new options. It's a very popular thing at this company, and you can even get promoted, on a flexible work arrangement. So a step in the right direction. A country that's gone some distance to embedding it not just in the private sector, but also in government and in the civil service is Britain. Under Tony Blair in 2003, they had a right to flexible work piece of legislation, which has been a huge success in Britain. It's not an old-style mandate or some kind of, expensive burden on business. Rather, what it does, it gives every individual the right to request flexible work and to, put forward a proposal. The employer needs to listen and consider it. If there are business reasons why this can't fly, the employer is allowed to turn it down. Otherwise, it does fly. And over the last couple of years, 1 million additional British folks have earn the right to take a flexible schedule, courtesy of this new legislation. It's a great idea for the U.S. It's very much plugged into market signals, and I think could work here.
Do you think ultimately what will push more flexibility now, though, is government policy or these demographic changes you're describing that leave companies needing the woman power?
I think in the States, it's going to be the demographic shifts. I don't think we've yet understood what it's going to feel like having, those 80 million baby boomers moving out of the workforce. And we have, a smaller group of 30-year-olds these days to take up the reins. So I think there are going to be all kinds of holes and, shortages, and that is going to drive change. But certainly one could imagine in this next, presidential election, perhaps, talking about how the government can be a partner, how it can help, change the atmospherics here and become a bit of a leader, too.
Let's go to Shannon in Simsbury, Connecticut. Shannon, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say that I'm the exact woman that I think Sylvia is writing about. I was an attorney or am an attorney, but have left after about a year after I had my daughter to go part-time,
right.
Found that that wasn't working for me. The hours just were creeping up. And
right.
My 80% schedule creeped up to, back to a full-time schedule,
right.
So I had to leave altogether. I would
right.
love to get back into the workforce now, but I'm having a difficult time finding a job where there is, it's not going to be 50, 60, 70 hours a week, but is a more manageable, 40 hours, a normal 9-to-5 job, and that just doesn't seem to exist when you have a professional degree and looking for a certain type of job. At least I wish I could find some of these places, some of these jobs that Sylvie's writing about, these like Ernst & Young for the accountants. And
But in your experience,
like
you're not finding them lying all over the place, Shannon.
Almost nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
And the part-time jobs that are on the books, they're not part-time in reality, or they're not flexible. Even if you're willing to work, 30 hours or close to a full-time schedule, it just, they're, at least in my experience, they creep up and aren't really workable as part-time jobs.
Yeah, we hear it. Sylvia, here's a reality check. Shannon wants exactly what you're describing. Can't find it.
Shannon, you're absolutely right. I think the law sector is a laggard here. This summer, we're just starting a new project with some law firms trying to make it a reality for your sector. Plug into our website, get involved in this work, because we are trying to, force some change here. But again, the magic of the task force, 34 companies trying to help each other. GE, for instance, has a great new model in place. They've had part-time work available at GE for quite some time, but what they didn't have was an acceleration lane so that, you had a possibility of ramping up down the road because, many women do not want to get caught in a cul-de-sac, for the rest of their lives. But one of the voices in this book, someone called Jean Rosario, she actually worked part-time at GE for 10 years. And then 2-3 years ago, with GE getting newly much more self-conscious about trying to figure out how to have alternative career paths, she was given stretch assignments, the option to kind of work hard and, you know, get on a promotional track. And today she heads up aviation aircraft engines for GE, a very empowering example. And I think that there are things we can borrow from other sectors and absolutely put to work in the law sector. And that's what we're starting to do this summer. And it is one of those sectors which up until now has not done much.
Why would law be more resistant? Because it's charging by the hour. So the pressure once you've got a client is always to, you know, get on it and do more?
You know, I think that the billable hours framework is very rigid. In fact, just last month, the two top graduates from Stanford Law School, both of them men, went out on the market saying that they wanted a job and they were willing to take pay cuts that had a 25% fewer billable hour requirements because they wanted to craft a life that had some balance and could work for them. I think it's very interesting that they got an incredible response from this sector, which I think is finally beginning to understand that they need to, you know, create an alternative vision.
Wow, talk about demographic change. The men of that generation may help drive it. You mentioned with GE something you described as the acceleration lane. I'm still curious if people find an on-ramp, get back on, come back in having taken that time away, can they really get back on the fast track? You know, the competition's fierce. You describe men kind of shaking off women by staying at their 80-hour week when women don't want to or cannot. Can women really get back into the corner office game here if they want to after having taken the off-ramp?
Tom, a central question. And up until very recently, it was incredibly hard. You know, one thing I look at in this book is what happens to women's ambition. Age 35, 38. And guess what? It starts to be downsized. Coming into the workplace after, say, a career interruption, you hit a brick wall. And, you know, women are masochistic. They understand that it's tough, that they're losing traction, and they tend to downsize their aspirations and their dreams. So, you know, some of the companies in the task force are figuring out how to help women claim and sustain their ambition in those, you know, middle stretches of the career path.
And what if they still got the high? What if they still have the high flame of ambition, but the guys turn around and say, "Wait a minute, you haven't been here, you know, 80 hours a week for the last 2 years. Who are you to think you're on the fast track now?"
Well, here's the deal, Tom. No woman expects to come in as though that off-ramp hadn't happened. Mm-hmm. She's not expecting to be at the same level as someone, you know, who stayed with the program during those years. But what she is expecting is an ability to prove herself again, an ability to show some ambition and be rewarded for it. So obviously she comes back in at a slightly lower point, but what she's seeking is opportunity to prove that she can, you know, cut the mustard, that she can make progress.
We're talking this hour about women and work in the age of extreme jobs. My guest is economist Sylvia Ann Hewlett. Her new book is Off-Ramps and On-Ramps, Keeping Talented Women on the Road to Success. And she describes here a couple of dozen big global firms who are changing the traditional career path to do exactly that. I want to turn right now to Atlanta, Georgia, and Allison O'Kelly. She's CEO of something called MomCore, a rapidly growing job placement agency that finds work for professional women who, I guess, are not currently in the workforce. Allison O'Kelly, thanks for joining us. What are you doing? How's it work?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well.
Hi, Sylvia. It's nice to join you as well.
Yes, nice to hear your voice.
I know
all about
finally.
You.
I've heard about you for a long, long time. We are a staffing company. We work with companies, a lot of the types of companies that Sylvia is talking about, and we help moms, almost 100% moms, although we have the few men or non-moms as well who come to us, who are looking to get back in the workforce or remain in the workforce flexibly, whether it be part-time, project, or even full-time with different kinds of hours.
So you what offer them temp work as mainly moms who don't want to work full time? Is that the idea?
We do. We do a little bit of both. We do temp work, and we also do part-time permanent placement. So we help match people up with companies who are willing to hire somebody on a, let's say, 30-hour-a-week type job.
You are maybe the case in point yourself, a CPA, got a Harvard MBA, worked for KPMG and Toys R Us. I mean, you were in that world, and then what, Allison?
I was absolutely, I was listening to the earlier caller and kind of laughing because I was exactly that person too and figured out a way to do it for myself. However, I was at Toys R Us when I had my first child. I now have two. Mm-hmm. And I was given the perfect quote-unquote opportunity where I was working 3 days a week, 8 to 4, which is unheard of in retail, and no. It was too difficult for me. I found a tough time. Not to me, it wasn't about the reduced hours. It was about the flexibility.
So even 3 days a week was too much?
Well, if your kid's sick Monday at 8 and you have to work Monday at 8, then that's still a problem.
So let me get your perspective then.
Yeah.
Do you think the kind of on-ramps that Sylvia is describing are going to be effective long-term? I mean, you've got high demand, on the work side and potentially high demand on the family side, shy of a temporary work situation like you're describing in the main. Can that work?
You know, I think it can. I think there's a couple of important factors. I mean, one is I think it's a very personal thing. So people need to figure out what they are willing or able to do. It just so happened that I had a child who did not do well in daycare and got sick a lot. There are other people who send their kids to daycare and have absolutely no problem with it. So I think that's one thing. And the other thing is it's matching up the right people with the right companies. There are some companies who might have more flexibility, but you're working more hours, or there are other companies that are more rigid, but you can work fewer hours, and it's just making sure that those correct matches are made.
Sylvia, a 3-day work week sounds like an on-ramp to me, but it didn't work for Allison.
Well, Allison's comments just shows that, one size does not fit all.
Mm-hmm.
And the flexible working arrangements that I'm talking about in this, new blueprint we have in this book really run the gamut from the 4 days a month, Booz Allen deal, to something, say, which is, 4 days a week, which is more of a standard E&Y, Ernst & Young reality. But let me just say something about the way in which flexibility is getting embedded. One of the companies I use as an example is British Telecom. A lot of engineers at that company, mm-hmm. in some ways, a recalcitrant sector. but over the last 3-4 years, they've figured out a system where 75% of everyone, including the male engineers, are now working flexibly. Because if you give teams the ability to figure out amongst themselves who is going to cover what, they often end up with kind of, all over the map kind of schedules, but ones that really fit their individual needs, and their productivity goes up. And that, I think, is fascinating data, because this is not some kind of nice guy thing. What we are talking about here is trying to kind of fit the schedules to the talent available rather than vice versa. And increasingly, it's not just, the 34-year-old mom with the second child we're talking about. We're also talking about, a Generation Y and a millennial generation where both the men and the women want to have a higher quality of life, want to have a better balance. And we're also talking about the 55-year-old set, that retiring baby boomer who does not want to retire but wants to work 30 hours a week and not 73.
Yeah, I was going to say that, Sylvia. We actually have had a number of retirees coming to us because they have the exact same issues.
Absolutely.
And so also, back to your earlier statement about the data, it might be interesting for you to talk to some of our people who have worked through us as well, but we hear from clients all the time that they are amazed by the efficiency of these people because they have 30 hours and want to get just as much done as they used to get done in 50 hours.
So it can work. Let's turn to our listeners, if I may. Chris is calling from Andover, Massachusetts. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm actually one of those people that you talk about. I have an MBA finance from University of Chicago and mm-hmm. had some very satisfying jobs following that. However, when we moved here to Massachusetts in the year I turned 40, 3 years ago, I decided to stay home and intending to jump back in. Well, what's happened is that I've discovered that one of my children, my older child, has some pretty serious special needs.
Okay.
And so I'm not going to be going back anytime soon. He needs someone at home.
So where does that leave you when it comes to work, Chris?
Well, what I've done, and understand that when I worked for United Airlines, mm-hmm. I used to walk down the street thinking, I have a great life. I love my job, my family, my house, my community. And then we came here, and everything changed, and it's a lovely place, but it wasn't the same. Well, about a year and a half ago, I realized that I wasn't going back when my daughter started kindergarten.
Yeah.
And so what I started doing was trading. I had been a trader when I first started out.
Were trading stocks just on your own hook or for an investment firm?
For myself. And I've taken a number of courses in that, and it has become, over the past year and a half, a nice, flexible, well-paying part-time job.
So you're at home trading stocks online and making a second career out of that, whatever anybody's employment policy may be. It doesn't matter to you now.
Doesn't matter to me. I work for myself.
Sylvia,
and
what do you say?
I plan to go back on.
It's a great story.
Right?
It's a fabulous story, Chris. And, you know, congratulations to you for having the spunk to do that. One of my children also hit major health problems at age 3, which is when I took one of my off-ramps, an off-ramp, you know, that inspired this book to some extent. I tell my story in the last chapter, mm-hmm. which I found actually a hard thing to do because you end up talking about some tough stuff.
Mm-hmm.
However, what I find in the data is that 19% of women who off-ramp end up starting their own businesses. And for some of those women, it is a fabulous success story. But, you know, it's not very secure. A third of these businesses, you know, fold in the first year. And what we find, just in terms of what women are looking for, is often, you know, a yearning to go back to a secure job with colleagues and, you know, a trajectory into the future and health insurance and, you know, retirement benefits and all of that. So I think that whilst it's a great option for the intrepid few, we have to figure out how to make, you know, regular jobs in normal kind of work sites more available to these amazing women who are plunging back in and have all kinds of the right energy. It's just that half of them do need some flexibility.
Chris, good luck to your trading project right there. Hope it works out well for you. Let's go to Leah in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Leah, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I'm calling because I have a friend who was a very successful architect, and she had a child, moved to Boston, and because her husband was going to MIT, and she got a job with a very small architecture firm, thinking it would be more flexible. She got pregnant again, and then she was fired when she was pregnant because it just, she couldn't spend those very, very long hours at her job. And what she has subsequently done is, because she is originally from India, she took her two kids back to India. She's now working as an architect there because she can get the child support. She can hire somebody to come in and take care of her children, but now she's separate. Her whole family is torn apart, and
You mean her husband's still here, and she's in India for childcare?
Yes.
Wow. What's the moral of this story, Leah, as you see it?
Well, I just think that as a society, we need to take this on. I mean, it's great when, big businesses can afford to maybe implement these programs, but when, the rest of us who don't work for these big companies don't have that kind of flexibility. I mean, I'm thinking of starting a family, but I just don't know how it's going to work for me.
Yeah, you can't come soon enough for you and for many others. Allison O'Kelly, I've just got you for another minute here. Do you see, your business depends on things not working in the traditional corporate world for women to some extent. Do you see the kind of changes that Sylvia Ann Hewlett is describing as propagating widely through corporate America soon or not?
I think it's both. I mean, I wouldn't say that we depend on it not working, because we do a lot of permanent placements as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we do a lot of the temporary work that I believe with time will get people these permanent placements, which it has in many cases. Mm. I think the large companies, I do think that it is going to happen and they are going to make changes. Like anything else, they're going to make changes once they have the need to make changes. Some of them are at the forefront and they just want to do it because they know it's the right thing to do. But there are other companies I've seen in specific industries. Sylvia spoke about Ernst & Young. We've done a lot of work with KPMG and seen the same thing on a seasonal basis. That's one industry that they're hurting for people. So
accounting.
They are very much forced to be more flexible. I think you see other industries, some of these old school maybe power companies or different industries where it's traditionally been middle-aged males that are all retiring, and they're starting to see the need to be more flexible. So, you know, as Sylvia was talking about the demographic shift, once we see that, and we're already starting to see it in some industries, it's going to happen whether right now they think they're going to do it or not, because people are going to need to find a way to do that. And like I said earlier, I mean, what a little gem that people fall upon when they do it, because, as moms, we are super efficient. We learn how to get a lot done in a little bit of time because we have 15 other things that we have to do also. And we're, of course, dependable. I mean, we're a great group of people, and most people these days, as we're having our children later in life, have a great deal of experience, and they add a lot of value to these companies.
Allison O'Kelly, CEO of MomCore in Atlanta, Georgia. Allison, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Sylvia, share with us what you found toughest when you were off-ramping yourself in your own experience. What was most challenging about it?
I off-ramped Tom twice. Once in my early 30s, I was a college professor and had a very difficult twin pregnancy. I actually lost the babies in the seventh month. And in the wake of that, my struggle to have a second child was, big time.
Yeah.
And I did take some unpaid leave of absence because that second child was born prematurely, and obviously I had a whole set of anguish to deal with. I was then fired. Again, experiencing, very much the kind of discrimination that often, surfaces if you go through some troubles with childbearing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then later in my 30s, I had finally reestablished my career. My kids seemed fine. And I had a new job as a head of a policy research group, again in New York. I built it up. It got to be a pretty extreme job because I needed to travel to Washington quite a bit to do some testifying. And that's when my three-year-old hit some major health problems. And I knew I just couldn't do this job because I was needed at home.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to negotiate a three-day week with 2 days spent working from home. I was turned down. And so I quit. I just walked out of that corner office, understanding that I was shooting myself in the foot. And what I then did is that, I became a full-time writer, and I learned to write books in my bedroom, which ultimately became somewhat successful.
Mm.
And I think what that story shows is that I was kind of right in that it was very hard after that second off-ramp, which occurred when I was 39, to get back into any kind of institutional job. But, us, working moms are very resilient, and I did find a way of resurrecting, a kind of a third career, if you like. It did leave me with a very profound understanding of, how easily it was to get derailed and how we needed to figure out these second chances.
Mm.
And one of the stories right at the end of this book, I think, sums up the opportunities out there.
We've got half a minute. Make it quick, Sylvia. We want to hear it.
Yes. Canaries in the mine.
Mm-hmm.
We used to send canaries down the mine to pick up the bad gases, and then they would, crash and burn, and we would know it was unsafe.
Mm.
Today, I think moms with small kids are the most conspicuous casualties of an out-of-date career model. But just behind them in the mind are young people, you know, millennial generation men who want a different balance, but also retirees who, again, want to recraft their lives. So a whole stream of constituencies all pushing for change, and I think it's going to happen.
Can't happen soon enough for millions and millions of people. Sylvia Ann Hewlett, thanks for pushing on that change, and thanks for describing it so wonderfully. The book is Off Ramps and On Ramps. Thanks for joining us today.
It was great. Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.